Welcome to episode 39 of This Is Not Happening, an Album of the Month podcast from me, Guy. Joey.
Yes.
He's back. Guess who's back? David.
Back again.
Maybe.
Nolan.
Joey's back. Tell some men.
Tell some men.
No, that don't you remember? Ken Keniff did it. Like he did it at the end of an Eminem album. Where he was like, Ken is back. Tell some men.
Nope.
Okay, yeah, it's a strap of mine. This month we pivot from the unsparing hip-hop of No Name back to early pod artist Sufjan Stevens and his new album, Javelin. That one's on David, and he'll be jumping in shortly. For part two in Spin It or Bin It, we each pick a slant on unconventional love songs, tracks that approach the genre from a bit of a different angle. That is coming up after the album chat. As ever, if you're new to This Is Not Happening, please get into our previous eps. We cover a lot of ground, and we'd love to know what you think. Head to thisisnothappening.buzzsprout.com or search for This Is Not Happening wherever you get your podcasts. Check the blog out at thisisnothappening.net for all previous episodes, reviews, album tracks, playlists, all the other goodies. Anyway, normal business covered. Over to you, David. Everything that rises must converge. Everything that rises in a word.
Everything that rises must converge. Everything that rises. Hello, listeners. So I'm very excited to be presenting this album. It's been pretty hyped. It's had a lot of coverage. It's very interesting. It's got an amazing backstory. It's got everything you want to delve into, really. And it's an artist I think we've all got a relationship well with, and that is Sufjan Stevens and his new album, Javelin. For anyone who's not familiar with Sufjan, he's a very interesting place he lives in the pop firmament. He is, I guess, kind of adored by indie fans and Pitchfork and all the usual kind of indie outlets. But he's one of those artists, I suppose, that's kind of crossed over into the public consciousness a little bit. And if you look on his Spotify, you know, his biggest songs have got massive, massive numbers. He's not a small artist at all. But his work can feel very personal and very intimate. I suppose he made his name in the noughties as a kind of Americana folk troubadour. He said he was going to make an album about every state. He only managed two, Michigan and Illinois. I think Michigan was the first album of his I heard, but it was Illinois. I think that was really his breakout album. I think that was in 2005. That was his. I think that was the album that brought a lot of people to his attention. He's a very interesting artist that's got a very singular voice. I mean, His song titles used to sound like the kind of songs they sounded like the titles to kind of 19th century novels. Let me just give you a couple of titles from Illinois. A Short Reprise from Mary Todd, Who Went Insane, But For Very Good Reasons. And The Predatory Wasp of the Palisades Is Out to Get Us.
Do you think he's happy with those song titles now, looking back?
I don't know. Do you know what's interesting into is that I think, you know, we're going to talk about
Frazier sub episode title, aren't they?
I'm pretty sure he used to say stuff like that to me out on a club night. I'm like 98% sure he used to come up and say shit like that to me.
As a writer, I admire him. You know, I think it's great. I think it's interesting, you know, about his reputation, how he continued to grow and like who he is. I think there's a kind of weird authenticity about him, and I suppose that's one of the things about him that people like. What is amazing about him is, I think there's a couple of things to mention just as an intro. One is, I think that his Christianity, which is a really big part of his kind of personality and his work. I mean, it's not unheard of as a contemporary white indie singer-songwriter to have a faith, though it's probably quite unusual, but it's the way his faith plays a part in his religious belief, play a part in his songwriting and his lyrics, and you can hear it over time and time again. What is, I suppose, even more interesting is that he's quite a big name artist in his own way, and he's got a lot of fans. I was just tweeting about his new album on the dying shithole that is Twitter. But it was like, I had a few people respond to me and go, oh my God, you know, like who people I knew vaguely, other writers and other people. And he does have that effect on people. And I think what's really interesting is that when you look at his output, it's so diverse and crazy. Like he's made a 42 song Christmas album. He's made a second 58-song Christmas album because 42 songs wasn't enough first time round.
Fair.
They're actually really useful if you put them on at the beginning of the 12 Days at Christmas. Like, it's over by the end, so it's like a nice soundtrack for the whole 1.5 weeks.
Amazing. No?
He basically said Brenda Lee did it pretty well over like 20 years. I'm gonna do it in an album, and then he thought, oh, I didn't get it right. You know what was missing? The other 52 songs I had in my pocket.
Quite. So there's that. And then I think he broke out massively from being this kind of indie singer-songwriter and his folk artist. He made this album called The Age of Ads, which was this kind of broken electronica. It completely broke up what he was. He's also made soundtracks, ambient records. He's had collaborations with other people. He returned to that kind of broken electronica with his last album, The Ascension. Now, interestingly, I wrote on our little write-up about it. I said, we all struggle with The Ascension. Joey took me to task, rightly, and said, that is not true. You might have struggled with it, my friend, but I did not. And so I want to make it clear that there was a variety of opinions about The Ascension, but it is definitely not straight down the line folk music, and it's definitely got some challenges about it. So he covers all this ground, and it's like he's got this restlessness, and he's like, he doesn't seem to mind if people, you know, go with him or not. I do think at the heart there is this kind of incredibly gifted singer-songwriter, and who knows how to craft an amazing song, and definitely this, you know, this album returns to that. For me, his high watermark was 2015's Carrie and Lowell, which he reflects on his difficult relationship with his mother and his stepfather, and, you know, a very intimate album. You look on one of those tracks, 4th of July, it's got 298 million plays on Spotify. You know, he is connecting with people in a major way. That is, you know, this is really interesting that someone is so intimate, but also so adored. So here we are, 3 years on from the Ascension, and here comes Javelin, and immediately struck by the beauty and the scale of it. The songwriting reminds me of Carrie and Lowell, but you've got other stuff here. You've got choirs, orchestra, and interesting the electronics of The Ascension as well. So, I mean, the moment I heard "When Anybody Love Me, Ever Love Me," the early single, it was like, wow, this is literally one of the best songs he's ever written, straight away. Especially, if you never listen to it on headphones or listen to it with a great speaker system, check it out, because the arrangement of it, you know, bringing in the kind of choir, and one of my favorite things, the banjo, into a song. Bring me a banjo and I will bring you my love. That's all I'm saying. So
you can take that so many different ways.
Also a Surf Jam B-side.
Now, we always ask the question, what did you expect and what did you get? The point is, I think we all have a relationship with Sufjan because we've actually reviewed his records before. Some of us are big fans, some of us less so. I think we all expected something, actually. And we've all had the experience of Carrie and Lowell and of The Ascension. So I suppose the question is, what did you expect and what did you get? And I'm going to start with Nolan.
I was just trying to think, did we do Carrie and Lowell when we were doing the blog? I think we did.
We did. We definitely did.
We did it on the blog, but not.
Yeah, so, yeah, so we did it on the blog. Yeah, so yeah. This is also what you didn't say then is that this is the first artist we've actually done three albums on.
Oh yeah,
which
correct.
We've ticked a couple boxes with two between the blog and the pod, but this is three, and this is two actually on the pod. You know what? Since I first heard him in the noughties, I've been a fan. There's just always been something different. There's been something kind of, I don't know, like majestic-y kind of folk about him that always kind of so intrigued me. And like, you know, him using instruments that nobody does, and especially with his earlier albums, you know, the first two albums of the 52 states. I remember thinking, fuck, he's going to be at this for ages. What's he going to sing about some of the shitty states? But anyway, that's by the by. But like, I've always like been really intrigued by him. And one of the things that's always been intriguing about him for me is that, although he makes beautiful music, I don't really feel he exposes himself that much. You know, he compared to a lot of his contemporaries, I think he's always been a bit guarded. Yeah, I do think so. Like, and, you know, I'm a big fan. I think I'm actually in the minority in the world of fans of his. I quite liked his first Christmas album. I still put it on every Christmas. I get an absolute battering about 36 songs.
No, I like about the first 20 songs are great. The last 22,
Yeah, but yeah, it gets to a point where my wife is like, what is this? And then we move on to, you know, Brenda Lee or whatever. But you know what? And I know that there was mixed feelings with The Ascension. And I really, like, even though it didn't fully tick all the boxes for me, because I think when you're so vested with an artist, you want everything to be a certain way. And at the same time, we always say artists need to evolve. I mean, as you said, David, he does so much stuff. Like, yeah, his output is insane. Like, has he done like 4 projects since The Ascension, like with scoring stuff? And
I was just looking at exactly that. 1, 2, 3. That's just in his name. But then there's the collab with Angeline D'Augustine. There's a few, yeah, 4 or 5, I think, Nolan. You're right.
Like, insane output, right? And so,
yeah,
you know, what? Some are more in the limelight than others, but, you know, he did an album, he tried some stuff, and actually there was some still really good stuff on it. But I think really what all of us wanted from that album was an album like this. And yeah, what did I expect and what did I get? I wasn't sure after his last album, to be honest with you. What I got on the first couple of listens, and I said it on the blog, is that maybe the best album he's ever written. And I know that you've not really touched on it, David, but, and I know that we're going to delve into it through the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But bearing in mind, he's done the output that Joey's pointed out in the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
He has had the most horrific experiences.
Worst,
yeah. I mean, you know, he has had his partner pass away.
We're going to get into that in a minute. Yeah,
yeah. And he's also been fighting. Is it like autoimmune disease? You know, yeah. and you know, it turns us all on the head. And I know we'll get into this. So that's my answer. Is that I actually got, arguably, and I said it on the blog a month ago. And my biggest challenge with this album is that I still haven't fully digested it. You know, we listen to albums for a month and we deep dive them. I still feel that I'm not fully acquainted with this album, but like in a really good way.
Because there's so much. Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so much.
Amazing. Guy, I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I've probably got the least history with Sufjan out of all of us. But I mean, still, it's still, you know, 8, 9 years. I think I read back Carrie and Lowell entry on the blog. God, I was going through a breakup then. That's embarrassing. luckily, three months later, I met my wife, who is readers still married to me, thankfully. So I mean, I was a huge fan of Carrie and Lowell, and I think I actually went back and listened to The Ascension as well. And you know what? For the first 7 or 8 tracks, it's a fantastic record. It just, there's no one tapping him on the shoulder. It's the main problem. The sort of quality control and restraint isn't there. And he's a singer-songwriter that when he pairs it back to the kind of hilt is when he's most effective. You know, you look at some of the stuff from Carrie and Lowell, it feels so earnest and so painful. I mean, there's a sonic trick that I think I've worked out that when his voice and the banjo is so dry and so close to the mic and so in there, and then you listen to the orchestration on some of this, which we'll come to, I guess, in more detail. And it's really big and it's maximized and it's wide angle and it's reverbed. It's everything. And then you go back to his voice and it sounds like he's singing it in a small cupboard.
Wow.
And it sounds so intimate. It's a really, interesting thing.
Beautiful point.
Like, feels like he sat next to you. Like,
yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I'd love to know. You know, we're talking about Perfume Genius using that mic to do his voice and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I'd love to know how he sets himself up to sing. But yeah, that's so interesting about the banjo. The banjo is this weird little, it does imply this sort of strange authenticity, doesn't it? It's kind of like it's got this sort of, it's a funny little instrument. You know, you can only get certain sounds.
Yeah, no one would do that for the Lols, would they?
Like, no one could do that for the Lols, exactly.
You couldn't get away with it.
No.
Yeah.
But that, you're right. And when it goes widescreen, like the difference between the intimacy and the widescreen is incredible. Yeah. And he's never done that on a record before.
No. And I think The Ascension, the way I see this record, so what did I get? I was genuinely hoping for something that was somewhere in between, because I really loved bits of The Ascension, I realized. And actually that's what we've got. To me, we genuinely have the kind of the confluence of all the best things out of Carrie and Lowell and The Ascension. Yeah, I don't have as much history to know those reference points further back. But and what you get as well is this kind of sort of dynamic shift through all the songs, where it often starts very intimate. It's just him and a banjo or him and a piano. And then suddenly you just get this explosion. Like, you know, Goodbye Evergreen is a great start. Like, the first impression of the album was like, oh, this is, I mean, we'd heard the singles. It's like, oh, this sounds like Carrie and Lowell. Oh, this sounds like this. Oh, this sounds like Carrie. It's very clever the way uses it, like almost like a sort of a set of bellows. It can kind of open and close the kind of effect of the music it has. And yeah, I mean, the first single was great. Will Anybody Love Me is in my top tracks of the year long list. It's an incredible record. But what I think you get is this really intimate expression of life. And we'll come to, I guess, the surrounding story. Yeah, but actually, I think what you actually get is something that feels very universal and very personal.
Strangely uplifting.
Yeah, exactly that. And that's my other point. Reading a lot of the reviews, I couldn't quite put my finger on how I felt about the album slightly differently than others, but you're absolutely right. Where there's a bleakness, certainly in the last two albums that I know of his, there does feel like a positive. There's sort of major chords thrown in. There isn't this kind of, songs don't just like fall off into the abyss. They'll end in quite this personal sort of uplifting note. And that, I think that's just giving it something extra.
Yeah. We should also say it's 42 minutes long. It's absolutely, you know, it's the opposite of indulgence.
It's a drum.
It's high as a drum, you know, with an 8-minute track on it, which is the shortest 8-minute track you've ever heard in your life. It's just, you know. Anyway, Joey, I'm going to come to you. I know you've got an interesting relationship with Sufjan.
So let's go back to the question we're asking. As always, it's like, what did you expect and what did you get? I think from your introduction and, you know, Nolan pointing out just like how prolific this guy is. I mean, he's just like a creative machine, isn't he? What do you expect from a Sufjan album? Like, you don't know is the answer. So it could be anything. It could be any mix of anything that he's done before and or anything that you've never heard him do all at once. What did I want it to be? I think I completely understand Nolan's first point then that you kind of reacted to was, I think Nolan said something along the lines of, he doesn't expose himself personally much, which you, like, I kind of agree. I made in my notes, if you look back, he's a real storyteller, isn't he?
Yeah, massive. Like,
my argument is he's often telling somebody else's story.
Right.
Exactly.
And therefore, there's a little bit of detachment.
But not on Carrie and Lowell.
He's still telling the story. Bear with me. So Carrie and Lowell, I think, he kind of unveils a level of personal involvement and exposure that he hadn't done previously. But he was still talking about somebody else's story. He was still, I mean, I know some of it was about the relationship with his mum, but it felt more like an album about his mum and his stepdad, but it was deeply, deeply personal. So if we then fast forward to The Ascension, I actually really like The Ascension. I'm going to be super, super harsh here. Like, I like authentic failures. I like somebody who tries to achieve something amazing and might fall short, because I really respect the...
That's a great comment. Yeah.
It is a great comment. Have you listened to Neil Young's albums from the 80s? That, I mean...
or the Tin Machine years of David Bowie.
I mean, that's a challenging failure, isn't it?
So I think what I wanted was kind of something that, like, dug into that personal exposure, for want of a better term, but also dug into that really experimental stuff that he did. Carrie and Lowell was so stripped back. It was so minimalistic. The Ascension was the exact opposite, and really angular and jarring and difficult. But I really liked it. So I was genuinely hoping for those two things to come together. I think I got that. But then I got the storytelling about himself and his feelings and his life.
Yeah.
And I think what I got was his best album.
Yeah,
I think I got an album that, on one hand, I can like work to, like it's quite nice in the background.
Yeah,
but I've also got an album that I was walking back from dropping my son at school this morning, and I cannot put my finger on it. It absolutely, I'm like, maybe you can hear my voice cracking when I'm saying this. It absolutely, completely emotionally floored me this morning. Yeah, and wow. I'm finding it difficult to describe. And I forgot it was the there's two tracks that run together. It's Javelin, the title track, and Shit Talk.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
And I was you guys may know really well. I do most of my crying to music in Aldi, yeah.
As the listeners know.
I've added the A6.
Do you want to listen to which Aldi you'll be in, and then they can just like, see if they can spot?
I mean, what would be even usually, better?
It's usually Buckshaw.
It would be great if like someone from that Aldi worked there, and they all had like, and then got all their friends that worked at Aldi like a bit of like a what center aisle item is Joey going to start crying?
Yeah,
at? Is there a
photo of me?
They could join in. It'd be like a flash mob.
Yeah. Don't approach this man if he starts crying. It's normal.
Any Aldi listeners listening right now, just get in touch and we can sort this out anyway.
So I hope that's a really complete answer to what did I expect? Because I think I've done what did I expect, what did I want, and what I got. I genuinely think this is his best album.
Well.
And I actually think some distance.
Well, let me pick up on the emotional side of this because this is something really interesting happened here, right? So, for anyone who doesn't know, Sufjan's he's hardly a social media user particularly. He does have an Instagram account. He doesn't even allow you to comment on it. He only posts on it. I think he just can't cope with anything else. It has been known for the past year and a half, I think longer than that. He's suffered from a rare autoimmune disease means he's been wheelchair bound. He's had a horrific year with his health, like absolutely awful. He made this album during that year.
Yeah.
And that's all we knew when it came out. And so all the reviews mention his, you know, the autoimmune disease and all of this stuff. Now, when you listen to you're struck by the themes of loss, really obviously, you know, the opening song, Goodbye Evergreen. Genuflecting Ghost, what an amazing Sufjan title that is. Genuflecting Ghost. Come on, girls.
I don't even know what that word means.
Going down on one knee.
Is that what it is? Because I wrote my notes. I wrote in my notes earlier today. Yeah. Google it.
But he didn't get around to it. It means going down on one knee, which is the most Sufjan thing that could ever happen in the whole world. So you're there going.
I don't know why I didn't know what that meant. It comes up in conversation every day, right?
Yeah. Who amongst us have not been genuflecting today? But anyway, it was interesting. This all came out. He let all the reviews happen, and they all mentioned the autoimmune disease and the things he's been through. And when you look at and you listen to these songs, you're thinking, "Gosh, he's going through a lot." And you know, when you listen to "Will Anybody Ever Love Me," you think, "God, this is just a guy dealing with." You know, mortality because he's dealing with this awful autoimmune disease. And that's how you look at the record. Three or four days after the record came out, he posted this Instagram post, which is when I first came across it, I think I read about it. I didn't even know he was on Instagram and I found it. I read it and I literally just burst into tears. Like not only has he been wheelchair bound for the last year, but he lost the love of his life, a man he'd been in a relationship with. And by the way, he's never been open about his sexuality. That's not important. It's not hard to imagine him being a kind of queer man. It's not weird at all. But it's interesting you talk about his privacy and when both Nolan and Joey saying, actually, how open is he about himself? So, and he just posts a picture of the guy that he's, you know, was his partner. And so never mind the autoimmune disease, he's been in a relationship with this man that he loved very, very dearly. He writes this beautifully moving post. I mean, if you haven't seen it, just prepare yourself and go read it because it's devastating. And then, but he didn't post that before the album came out. I'm fascinated to know. It must have been so hard to go through that anyway. And he's clearly a very private man, but he decided to make that public. Then I went, the album came out. I was really excited. I loved it. I listened to it. I went back after just reading that post and the entire record was changed like overnight for me. And I was like, I found some of those songs. Well, Goodbye Evergreen, the opening song, you know, it's like,
Goodbye Evergreen, you know I love.
consent. So my question is, wait, there is a question here. You know, we all have this interesting relationship between the public and private details of an artist. You know, when you know something about an artist, it can alter the listening experience. Did that revelation about the death of Subjan's partner and his autoimmune disease, did it have an effect on your listening experience? And if so, how did it affect it?
I can't answer for everybody. I can't see how that it couldn't impact your relationship with the album. I think like when I listened to it at first, I felt a lot of the things that I feel now. I just think like the intensity of those feelings have been like multiplied tens and hundreds of times by the revelation. The tracks that I just mentioned, Javelin and Shit Talk, are basically songs about arguing with your partner.
Yeah, they are. They are.
But when you then find out that they're songs about arguing with a partner that you can't say sorry to.
Yeah, mate. It's
where do you come back from that, right? I don't know. You know, it brings it back to the point that we were discussing. Like, you know, this then becomes an outlet. Obviously we don't know when he's written these songs, right? But is it something that he's just like, okay, well, this is I know how to do one thing, and this is how I'm going to approach it, which I think is very beautiful. And I think is also interesting. Like on your point, David, about, you know, all the focus was on the autoimmune, and then he came out with this beautiful and heartbreaking post, really. I think that, you know, we talked about it in our WhatsApp chat, like none of us saw that coming. You know what I mean? Like it was one of those things that was so exposed.
I'm sharing it with you all and just going, Jesus Christ. I just like, you know, and when you look at a track like Will Anybody Ever Love Me, like it's, you can now read it as like I don't mean something, like a strangely self-pitying thing of like, my God, I'm on my own. Like, or will I ever make sense of the world because of the tragedy of it? You know, like it's sort of, it adds layers, and I'm really fascinated that interaction between music and what you know about an artist. And you know, sometimes you listen to a song, you don't know who it is, it doesn't matter, right? But those aren't profound, you know, relationships. Anyone that we love, we know stuff about them, right? Any artist that we love, you know.
You said exactly, everyone said exactly, like it is impossible, like it's a complete, it's like it sort of flipped it to a different record. And there's a real parallel with Judy Byrne, who we listened to a couple of albums ago, is an album made with grief in mind. The difference between those two albums, obviously, is publicly that was a known fact before the album came out. But it really leans into that concept of music as therapy, because we've all been through grieving situations, and some music is a solace, some music it's too raw, you just can't hear. And yeah, I mean, I think it put a different spin on the album. It made tracks, exactly as you've said, Joey, like hard to listen to initially, really hard to listen to, especially, as you say, especially Goodbye Evergreen. But there's these touches where you hear the pain of loss in real time. You hear him realizing that he can't right wrongs and can't take things back. And it's utterly, utterly heartbreaking.
You do feel like it. Maybe he's talking about them arguing as well, and like the difficulty of the relationship.
Yeah, 100%.
He's not idolizing the relationship.
These aren't 10 songs about, oh, this was like this perfect love. Yeah. Like it's not that. It's real. It's like real world. It's got thorns and it's got barbs and.
Yeah.
But I think when you were talking about, you and Nolan, Joey, talking about how perhaps he hasn't bared as much of himself as you might want in album, what I found is an interesting development over the past few weeks. For the first week or two that I listened to it after I'd read this news, it was impossible to separate. I was almost searching to like pin lyrical meaning on his situation. Yeah. Yeah. And what I then started to realize that as much as there are songs that clearly lean into those specific things, it started to kind of mist away from that a little bit as well. And I've really enjoyed the album a lot more from that. So Shit Talk's maybe my favorite song on the album. It's an incredible album. And you listen to a song, you listen to it, and you like, oh God, is this is what he actually, and then you start thinking, well, no, it isn't. It can't be. No one's ever going to write the exact words. And then it starts to have a two-layer meaning. There's a universality to it that everyone connects to. And once you start, once the kind of mist of that grief that he's expressing starts to settle, I think the album takes on an even of richer hue to me.
Can you just, for the listeners who haven't heard Shit Talk, because it's a really interesting track, the songs are all very, actually very tight. This is 1 8-minute track. And my heart sank slightly because sometimes you can write 8-minute tracks and you go, oh God. And it's nothing like that at all. Can you talk us through like how Shit Talk works?
I mean, it's almost like a song in three parts anyway. So you listen to it and the first 3 minutes odd could just be another sort of classic pared down record that he writes. Yeah. And then there's a sort of bridge. It feels like he's basically talking to someone, obviously a partner. But the lyrics are like so unsparing. In the future, there will be a terrible cost for all that we've left undone. Deliver me from everything I've put off and all that we've lost. It's just this like shattering sort of ongoing litany of
trying to be
all the things that happens. But I think then it kind of goes through a bridge into this long refrain with this amazing kind of choir of female voices that come through the record that almost take on his partner or the person he's singing about more generally character.
It feels like a relationship argument, right?
It does. Like it absolutely does. I
mean, that's what's amazing to write about. You think about this is a grief record and he's writing about a kind of row, I feel like, you know.
But one thing when we talk about the dynamics and the lyrics and the music, one thing that I suddenly clicked about the song was that the most caustic, desolate lines in it are dropped right into an orchestral flourish that drowns them out. Wow. So you get, put them to the foot of the bed and set it on fire. And I will always love you, but I cannot. And it comes in. And what you miss is him going, look at you. I cannot look at you. Or I cannot live with you. But the live with you and look at you comes as the kind of notes come in and the choir swells. And it took me about 10 or 20 listens to go, what was he saying? And then you read it and you're like, Christ, there's these little incredible, very subtle points that just like floor you in ways that you don't expect at the time. And it's one line.
And there's something about the subtlety of that. Right. This is an 8-minute track. I've got the lyrics in front of me now. And look, I get it. I know lyrics always look more sparse when you read them and not listen to the music, but the lyrics are like, they're pretty sparse. But the majesty of how they're interpreted when he sings them and how that track is orchestrated, I think that's my track of the year. I think I'm just looking at it now, just in wonderment, like,
Well, you say to make an 8-minute track that tells a story that complex within the simplest and most kind of brutal way is in the light of this. I mean, I'd like to also remind you, like, the opening, when I came back and I'd read that Instagram post, I put the thing on, and the thing that made me cry immediately is that the opening lines of the album are, goodbye evergreen, you know I love you, but everything heaven sent must burn out in the end.
How did we miss that? How did we miss?
I mean, because we thought it was a song about a tree.
Oh, that's
but the thing is, like, real talk, did anybody actually not think it was about a tree, or is it just me?
I didn't know if it was about a person. I think you're so used to these being sort of ciphers for something.
Well, no, I assumed it was a breakup song.
Yeah.
The last question I wanted to get into is, like, I suppose what is about it is about him. And we've touched on this a little bit, but like, I sort of jokingly said when I did the questions to you, I said, if you threw a rock in the street, you'd probably hit an indie singer-songwriter on the head. There were so many people who describe themselves as either indie singer-songwriters or folk songwriters, alt folk, whatever that is. He has reached this massively wider audience and he seems to occupy a special place in the musical world. What is it that he is doing? Especially when you're talking about, you know, sometimes he hides himself or he shows himself. What is going on here that makes him so feel that, you know, unique, essentially, in this place?
He can write a tune.
Well, that's always it, right?
Like, boy, like, he can write a tune. Well, no, and so that's that at the heart of anybody liking anything that he's done is an ability to write songs. Like, I don't think he's an indie songwriter. Like,
why? No. Okay, okay.
No,
like, okay, I don't think of him as indie. I know people who say that they like indie music, listen to him, so I get that. I think I understand why people would broadly bracket him as indie, or you know, indie folk, or indie, like, whatever, indie hyphen something else. Like, I kind of get it, but like, he's a songwriter, and I know that's a stupid statement of fact, but that's kind of like how I think of him. He is first and foremost a songwriter. You knew I was going to come up with a musical theatre thing, and I'm going to throw that in here. Like,
yeah,
he has this element of like musical theatre, like just like this, like he can sing the saddest songs, but still do it with like glad hands somehow. There's these musical theatre flourishes, and I joked on the WhatsApp group. Will Anybody Ever Love Me was playing. My son, who's 8, walked into the room and went, Is this the Encanto soundtrack? And he was being deadly serious, like 100% deadly serious. And I kind of laughed and I said, well, no, it's this guy. And then I put the song back on again and I was like, Lin-Manuel Miranda would be like totally proud to write that.
It's really hard to write that shit.
The Encanto soundtrack is banging.
It's really good.
Some of the songwriting on that, on 906, genuinely is brilliant. But there's a real kinship between that and not to labour the joke, because it isn't a joke. If you do listen to the Encanto soundtrack, it's genuinely heartbreaking as well. Like, absolutely. Genuinely heartbreaking.
Like, I'm not joking. Like, I think it's an amazing sound. Like, it's one of the only things that my daughter asks to listen to that I like.
So you're like, yep, every time.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Yep. Yeah, 100%.
I feel like I need to go and spend some more time with
you. Well, it's because your kids aren't as young as ours.
You're too old for that shit. Exactly.
But listen, I think there's an element with him as an artist is that he sits in that kind of folk, new folk category, but he's got timing in his career really right. And I don't think it's like he planned it, but I think there's just a natural thing. I do think that people try to sound like him. I think he's, you know, his sound when he first came out in the noughties was unique. I put in my notes to one of the songs that it sounds like a track from a Wes Anderson film. And I'd actually say a lot of his tracks sound like tracks from Wes Anderson film. But there is an entire generation of New Balance, Carhartt wearing hipsters, right? And we all fall in that category that love Wes Anderson films, love the world that he paints. And I think that you know, as an artist, he's done that really well as well, right? He falls into that. Interesting
comparison as well. Wes Anderson, Sufjan Stevens, hiding your emotions, hard to know.
Yeah.
You know, that's an
stylistic trick of substance over style, style over substance, but in a way that is really engaging.
But no way this album's style over substance.
But what I'm saying is, an artist, so he's taken a lot of influences, as Wes Anderson has, from, you know, multiple generations, and kind of melted them into this thing that a lot of people find appealing. And I also think that through being, as Joey says, an amazing songwriter and a really good artist, he's also hit some, you know, some timing right. Like, you know,
The
three tracks he did on Call Me By My Name were the standouts on that album, and, you know, are still some of his biggest tracks if you look at streaming.
And they still
properly hit me. I mean, one interesting thing is that I thought that it was very interesting that he got to a certain place that we rarely saw with him. And I kind of felt it was based on that story, but I think that the more I actually have listened to those tracks recently, it maybe kind of feeds into some of his own personal story and emotions, but he kind of hid that behind the film, which is also interesting.
I think he is that classic example of an artist that people pigeonhole into a genre or a scene that no one sounds like, and no one can sound like, and no one can try and get anywhere near what he sounds like. There's a way he writes melodies, to just from a musician point of view, I guess, where you listen to it and you go, well, that's a Sufjan Stevens record. And people go, why? And it's sort of like, well, so it's so the and there's a and he can't really tell anyone, but you know, it's like, and I guess maybe some of the bits about how dry his recording and voice and the banjo and now how he's dropping this stuff in. I listened to Carrie and Lowell, and again, it sang like he's singing into your ear. So that's a unique talent that is really hard.
Yeah.
No one sounds like him, and he doesn't really sound like anyone else. But I think he has, like all great songwriters, to your point, Joey, the ability to write music that sounds incredibly personal, so people connect with it because they think it's about them and written to them, and yet so universal that everyone does it. You ask about why he's so popular. I think he has that incredible knack of writing music that is really universal, but that people take into their heart because it feels like it's been written for them. And that is like an incredibly difficult feat. I think that, and yes, there's a lot more of him in this record, but you can also listen to it, like you said, Joe, you can listen to it while working, and it's this lovely oral soundtrack that just is a lovely, lovely experience on that level. So I think I was skeptical when I first heard Carrie and Lola, when you guys brought me to him, because you always sort of described him as a sort of indie darling, pitchfork hero. And that automatically makes me think I'm not going to like this, but you can't not. Like, it's one of what you've said this before, Joey. It's like, you know, who wouldn't like Sufjan? Well, probably people who don't like music, basically.
It's funny. I just today was thinking, I suddenly hit by a reference, an obvious comparison that had not hit me before. And it's so ridiculous when you think about it because it's so obvious. A songwriter who was one of the greatest songwriters of his generation by miles, who managed to write these amazing universal songs who were very emotional, but also kept himself out of it. And that's Paul Simon. And also,
you know who I thought you were going
genres,
to...
moved, you know, made different kinds of records, like totally kept moving, you know.
I thought you were about to say Elton John, and was
I was
about
thought you were going to say Elton John.
No, yeah. I thought you were going to say Rico Suave.
No, can you see what I'm saying about Paul
No,
Simon?
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
100%. But like the Elton John thing there, the musical theatre, the genre spanning, like playfulness, the storytelling about like. A lot about other people. Not many people sound anything like him.
No. That's it. That's the thing.
How many artists truly have there ever been that nobody's ever really sounded like?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Rico Suave. Once again.
And I would say one thing that's definitely lifted this and has, I think, taken him up a level is that female voice in this record. It's not something that, as far as I know, has really been there with him. And they play this part of the kind of receiver of his lyrics, but they give him space to breathe, and they allow the music and the tracks to go in places that he doesn't have to sing, but that still has a melody and element to it. And I think they add something like magical to it. So, I mean, God, high expectations, but you know, he's still got a long time left. God knows what he's going to turn out for the rest of his career.
So very briefly, just want to end the chat here on picking your favourite tracks from the album. If you don't mind, I'm sorry to do this. I'm going to go first. I am going to pick Will Anybody Ever Love Me, because I think it's one of the... It might become an all-time classic. 'Cause I really want to know.
I mean, it is the best song on the Encanto soundtrack. So
yeah,
exactly. Go and listen to it with some headphones after this pod. What's your favorite track, Nolan?
Oh, it changes every day. You know, the one that's really got me this week, because it's literally just changing and changing, is Little Red Fox. I just think it's such a beautiful track.
You can have
You can have it. I mean, it is you were gonna take it,
so. I think one that's really, again, like you, like it's really grown in me. It's like, So You Were Tired. That's probably the most emotionally devastating track on the album.
That was the fuse that lit my emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
Explosion this morning.
Yeah. But you're right, Nolan. Like, maybe shit talk aside, ask me every day of the next 10 days and I'll probably give you 10 different answers. And that's like we've always said, like, I will say one thing. I cannot get on with There's a World. I could happily not have it on the album. Ooh. That's my bum note at the end.
All right.
It just doesn't fit for me at all.
Right, interesting.
But I just don't care because the rest of it's amazing.
Look, I do think Shit Talk's the best track on the album. I think it might be the best track that's been released this year. But we talked about it quite a bit. The title track, Javelin, open brackets, to have and to hold. It's a terrible thought to have. I was wondering why it was called Javelin in the album, and I couldn't quite get it. The opening lines to Javelin, searching through the snow for the javelin I had not meant to throw right at you, for it had hit its mark, there'd be blood in its place where you stood. This is kind of a grief album, but a breakup album, but an argument album, twisted into this most beautiful piece of art.
And the whole time we thought it was but a tree.
Yeah. Wow. Or his love for track and field.
Exactly. Well, touché. On that bombshell.
Thanks, Sufjan. Get well soon, mate.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Mate, thank you for this album.
Thank you. This is not.
Welcome back to part two, Spin It or Bin It. We each choose a track on a theme and see if the other three want to play it or chuck it in a musical dustbin. This time, we take the palette of love songs and try to pick a track that approaches it in an unconventional way. So straight in is Nolan.
Who was it? Was it Joey? Was it you that thought of the theme this month?
Unconventional love songs.
And at first, I was like, what the fuck is that? And then, you know, when it kind of clicks, a bunch of songs hit your head, and we all had really good long playlists. And as always, we'll post in our link tree, you know, our four tracks each.
We've got a 16 track playlist. That's
really good.
Very excellent.
Really good. But for me, there was no question when I picked my track, which is Frankie Valli, The Night. Yes, the night begins to turn your head around. Now, this song is a Northern Soul anthem. Like, it's probably one of the most Northern Soul songs. I got an extensive chat at Joey and Stacey's wedding with either Joey's father-in-law or his father-in-law's brother. I'm not sure which one, but we had a long chat about it.
It'll have been Ken. Ken was like Mr. Northern Soul.
Yeah. But it was awesome. Guys,
props to Ken.
And also, David, props to us, because we smashed the shit out of that wedding. We were DJing, by the way. It wasn't like we were just at the bar or something.
We smashed it.
Basically, Joey gave us a playlist and we didn't stick to it. And after five songs, he's like, don't worry about the playlist, guys. I'm happy with this. It's great.
Well, as everyone knows, if you DJ someone's wedding and give you a playlist, you work out there's maybe one song you've got to play.
I don't know.
You might get around to the rest of it. You might
not. No, what happened was, you dipped your toes in the water by putting on Bonkers. Everyone responded well, and then it was a free
fall. No. It wasn't Bonkers. Bonkers is later on. It was Fleetwood Mac that got going. Anyway,
no, it wasn't. The third track you played at my wedding was Bonkers.
We must have smashed the shit up. We would have been steaming at that point.
Free tracks. Oh, you were steaming. Amazing.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. The grannies fled the dance floor, never came back.
They fucking loved it. Bonkers. Anyway, so back to Frankie Valli, The Night. Fuck Bonkers. I mean, that would be a weird love song. But anyway, so Frankie Valli, The Night is a Northern Soul classic. And it's also, you know, as someone that grew up in North America is, you know, Frankie Valli, and he was on Motown and everybody kind of knew he was a bit of a crooner, but I'd never heard the song until I moved to the UK. And it is, I'd probably argue, one of my favorite songs. But why is it an unconventional love song? It wasn't until my wife pointed it out that it's actually kind of like, I think we've all been there, right? It's that like great expectations moment where you're getting binned off for someone that your girlfriend likes better than you, but you know they're an absolute scumbag. And basically that's what this song's about, that he's saying, listen, before you go away, you got to understand that this guy's a bit of a prick. He's going to tell you a bunch of stuff and then he's going to bin you off. What I also love about this song is that he doesn't ask her to stay. He's just pointing it out. Musically, we were saying this off mic, you know, the drums are perfect, the bass line's perfect, the drops are perfect, the melodies are perfect. And I fucking love this song. And why I love it so much is that you go to, like, you see Northern Soul videos or like you'll be at a wedding or you'll be at something and everybody's singing this song with so much love. And it's like one of the most contentious songs that you can think of as well. So yeah, I absolutely love it, but I'd love to hear what you guys think about it.
I love this song. We're just saying off air that Jerry said he hadn't heard it before. I don't know where he's
genuinely have never heard this song.
Absolutely, I'm 98% sure we played it at your wedding after
Markers. There were a couple of great nights back in Leeds and the Hi-Fi Club. Move on up and the Cooker.
Yeah, but Joey wasn't a Hi-Fi guy though.
I get it. I'm just saying you would have heard this there, and it always played on the floor. I absolutely love it. I suppose I'm going to ask the question. Is it an unconventional love song?
Yes.
And then, wait.
Of course it fucking is.
Wait, I've just explained
to you why it is.
I know. And I found myself, I did have a look at the lyrics. So I was thinking, and you know what? You've totally won me round, because what the part of the song that's not there is where he sort of says, I love you, but please stay. And you're right. It's clever that he doesn't do that. He's just warning her about another guy, right?
But we've all been there, right?
You're
fucking gutted and you're into the person.
But you're almost saying,
listen, if you're that fucking dumb, you can go for it. But
it's gonna burn you.
The whole point of this theme is like we don't get to determine what a conventional love song is. We don't get to define what love is.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm saying
I'm coming around totally.
Nice.
It totally works. It's a genius choice. I was surprised when you picked it. And then I was like, oh, so well done. Brilliant. I'm spinning it.
I was actually in a similar vein to you, David. I was kind of like, this is obviously an absolutely classic record. It really is. And I was kind of like, but he's just sort of like, it's a breakup and he's telling him not to get. And I'm kind of, I was waiting for you to sell it to me, basically, Nolan. And that bit about not saying I love you, I didn't realize that bit. But the other thing is, I think it's unconventional because think of the time it was made. No one made songs that specifically talked about love in that way much. This wasn't made in like 1986.
This is also the guy that did Oh What a Night.
You know what I mean?
Like the contradiction is amazing.
Yeah. So it's like Oh What a Night. And then maybe that was the start of the night. And then maybe this is the end of the night when his girl's gone off with someone. Oh, what a night. What a fucking shit night. So spinning it, of course.
I love how we try and like, we spend like days nailing down the definition of the theme and then argue about the theme on the podcast.
That's the point. It's literally
one of the reasons I love doing this podcast.
I absolutely love this track. Look, I probably have heard it, but in terms of am I familiar with it, this is pretty much a new track for me. I was just saying to Nolan, like, what, there's something about it that really reminds me of something, and it's nothing like this track. It's Dance by ESG.
Massively. When you said it, I'm like, oh God, of course.
It's been bugging me all month, and then I've just nailed it.
When you've got that symbol.
Oh my
God.
Yep. Let's stick a little section of this in now. There we go.
Totally, will do.
What was that, Nolan?
Dance!
Anyway, are we all spinning it?
I am spinning this track.
Nice.
Well, strong start, 3-0. Joey, what's your classic Northern Soul record?
my track, I am very proud to announce, is Miss Fat Booty by Mos Def. I'm about to murk, I say peace to the family. She hop up like, how you gonna leave before you dance with me? Dance with me. She blew my whole head with that dude. I was like, what? I played it low, though. I was like, yeah, all right, come on then, let's go. I could read the lyrics for this track over and over again for the rest of my life and never get bored. It's like lyrically absolutely perfect. This is Mos Def starting off in like verse one in kind of maximum male bravado, falling in love, falling infatuation, falling whatever word you want to use for this girl who ends up giving him the brush off after like months of dating. It's like not something you hear in hip hop tracks. Mm-hmm. And to go that full arc of proper night out bravado all the way through to the brush off at the end of like the second verse, it's just amazing. There's a great Aretha Franklin sample in there. The beat's amazing. The video is just brilliant. And like, the video really like highlights some of the lyrical genius in there as well. I love this track. It wasn't what I had in mind when we came up with the theme, but over the month, this one just shone out to me. So I'm keen to hear what you think.
Joey, what have you done?
Ooh.
I am not sure if I'm more disappointed in you or me for not fucking picking this song. Like, this wasn't even on my fucking long list. And this is one of my favorite like hip hop records. Like,
here he is waving it in your face.
He fucking, oh my God, like, oh, this kills me so bad that you have like won like all everything. I'll give you all my Spinner Bennett wins from this year.
What?
You nailed it. No, like, he fucking has. Like, this is like, oh, I'm disappointed in myself, to be honest with you. I'm really disappointed in myself. I'm spinning it.
I never thought of this track. I love this album. It's one of the standout tracks on an album full of standout tracks. It's ridiculous. It tells such a story.
It is so good. Like when he's speaking for her,
he kind of deconstructs himself.
And so because, smooth like, as fuck. He's so smooth as fuck.
It is. I, you know what? I'm so glad you chose it because it's one of those things where I know this track. I've heard it a million times. I played that record all the time. It made me listen to it anew because you chose it for this. I would never have thought about this as a love song in a weird way.
It's the biggest
love song.
I know. I get it. No, I mean, of course it is. But like, it talks about his own attitudes and where and what he's thinking and her. And it's such a brilliant choice. Nolan's right. There's not a better choice amongst the four of them. Like, it just as a piece of genius, because I would never have seen it. And obviously, I'm spinning it. It's a brilliant choice.
Can I just say one thing about this track, though, that's always kind of irked me is that I think that I'm not saying that I could, because I can never imagine it being called something else other than Miss Fat Booty. But I also think that the title doesn't do the song justice.
Isn't that the point about what he's
thinking? I kind of think it does. Yeah, I think that's the point.
It's about what he thinks when he sees her, right? Rather than what he really like. That's the point, isn't it?
Fair.
I mean, I know. Fair. It's not. I get it.
But like, it didn't get played on tons of radio stations because it was called Fat Booty.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting. Yeah. Looking at this album, I was surprised to see. By the way, Black on Both Sides is now from 1999.
I know.
And yeah, it was when I was at university. Yeah.
Hey, do you want to know interesting
from
fact?
This century.
The rest of the album, the most number of plays on Spotify is Mathematics has got 70 million.
Miami says.
Yeah, 33. Right, Miss Fat Booty. 222 million.
Wow!
It's the standout track.
Like, Guy, I am really, really, really fascinated to know what you think of this because I know you hadn't heard this one before, had you?
I know of the album, but it is not going to surprise anyone who listens to this podcast or indeed who is on it. You know, early 90s to about late 2000s. I was a hip hop wasteland for the most part.
Yeah,
I liked a few things, but I was never into it. Big time enough to get onto an album like this. I knew who Mos Def was. I didn't know this record. I definitely should know this record. It's an amazing track. I spent a lot of time reading the lyrics, you know, show me a fat tan line and tattoo, playing Sade, sweetest taboo.
And burning wake candles, up next morning, all my other plans got cancelled.
Yeah, I like wake up the next morning, she's gone like it was magical. Damn it, my shit is on Harrison Ford frantic. It's a very, like, you can pick the pop culture references out. And if I'd never known what year it was, I'd have been like, is this the late 90s? Yeah, it's great. If you played me the songs of what you think of it, and then you said, oh, it's a love song, I'd have been like, what? But you're right, it is. And it's unpicking that bravado of like, oh, yeah, like this girl, like, I'm, you know, she's mine. And then it turns out it's not. I do love that. I like that kind of subverting the kind of macho genre of, yeah, of course I'm spinning it. Plus, I love Mos Def. He was great in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, I disagree. Sorry.
Oh, don't, please, guy, don't.
Oh my god. At least he didn't say Cosby Mysteries. Oh,
that was a terrible film. Terrible.
Oh, I have a real soft spot for it, but let's argue that.
That's not the subject tonight. Let's move on. Okay.
Are you all spinning it?
Yeah. Are we spinning?
Spin the shit out of it. Yeah. I'm actually going to get out the vinyl after this and put it on.
Oh, nice.
Oh, very nice.
Watch the video as well. Just like
I need to watch the video.
Like that was when that was like me in like full MTV base.
Your MTV Raps, right?
Like, so here's one for you. And they're on the same record label as well. This was released at the same time as Simon Says. And both the albums were released on the same day. Like,
were they?
What a time to be alive. That's all I'm saying.
Yep.
Another
over
great
to guy.
Song.
It's a guy.
Another
I was like, oh, yeah, this would be great. I've got loads of stuff. And then I was like, I've got absolutely nothing. And then I listened to a couple of tracks, and then it just, a 10-track playlist went bang, straight out, really quickly. This is Father John Misty, Chateau Lobby, or Chateau Lobby Number 4, brackets in C for Two Virgins, close brackets, if you want the whole title. This was the first album. I'm trying to remember. Did we do this as a blog album? I'm pretty sure we did.
Blog. Yeah, it was a blog album, yeah.
And it was blog, not pod, yeah.
Yeah. It was, well, yeah, because it's 2015, so it's like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I absolutely adored this album.
Me too.
I really did. And I went through a phase of being pretty like besotted by everything he did. Definitely for another two or three albums. And this is one of my favorite tracks on it. I think it's the second track on the album. Father John Misty is ex-Fleet Foxes musician, and he made this character kind of this cynical lounge lizard who sung about, like, you know, very bleak view on love and relationships and the rest of it. But what I love about this is, so this is a song really genuinely written about his future wife, Emma. So he married the woman that this song was written about, but he kind of captures that cynicism and stuff at the same time. You know, I haven't hated all the same things as somebody else since I remember. What a great line. And what's going on? What are you doing with your whole life? How about forever? I actually made a mix CD for my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, which had this on it, and she didn't know who it was, and it's now one of our favorite songs, to the extent when it was playing in the room just as we were about to walk down the aisle together, which I like because it has the line, you know, lift up your wedding dress, someone was probably murdered in, which would have played out over the wedding hall at Stockport Town Hall. So yeah, it's great. It does kind of reverses that trope, kind of talks about how awful everyone is, but like, bloody hell, hang on a minute, you're amazing. And like, how does this work? Maybe we'll stay together for the rest of our lives. Let's see what everyone else thinks.
I've always thought like it would be a great song at the start of like a Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh yeah, it's real like
Thelma and Louise-esque movie. Like,
or like roll credits at the end as well.
It's kind of... You know,
sort of a mariachi feel, isn't it?
The whole sonically and everything sounds great about the song, and then you listen to the lyrics, you're like, fuck, what did you just say?
It's one of those, isn't it?
And it's great. Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great pick, mate. You've nailed it.
I don't like Father John Misty.
Yeah, I didn't think you did.
I don't know if you're
a do you like this song?
I think this nails the brief perfectly. I'm going to tread carefully, obviously, because of your personal connections.
Oh, mate, I'm not obligating you to like
it. You're waiting. We can't throw this.
No. But it wasn't his wedding song. It was just played at his wedding.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's not the same.
No.
I played Bonkers at Joey's wedding, but you know.
It was playing just as we were about to walk into the wedding hall at the start of our service on the play we've made. But hey, I don't give a shit if you don't like it.
Oh, go on, Joey. Just say what you mean.
No. Oh. I think I
thought I was going to get Joey off the
I was looking
run.
Forward to what you thought, Joey, because I know this is the sort of thing that really gets on your tits. Go on, just say it. Go on. I want to hear
By the way,
it.
Joey's looking at the ceiling right now, trying to put his words together.
I will not remotely be offended by
so it. I might have to go back and like remind myself what I did say on the blog about the album. But
what has annoyed you about him? I mean, there's a lot to be annoying about.
There's a level of cynicism around, confected cynicism around the album.
Yeah, I think you just hit, like, he's a prick, isn't he?
He is a prick, right? I agree, right? I think he's a. I'm not a fan of his, but I actually do quite like this song.
Yeah,
like I mean, just for what it is.
I just struggled to get over the prick bit.
Let us list the list of pricks who make good music. Oh, hang on, a 1 hour podcast.
Yeah, obviously, like there's always massive contradictions, isn't there? But yeah, like I just found like I've just got major like antigens.
Yeah,
to him, full stop. Yeah. Yeah.
You look like your glands are swelling up there. Actually, yeah. Talking about it.
So Joey, do I dare ask?
North if you're going to me.
Are you going to spin it or bin it?
I am going to be true to my beliefs, and I'm going to bin it. I'm sorry, guy.
Well, that's fair. Fair. I respect you.
Not accepted.
So I'm in the weird. I'm in the weird experience where I actually love Father John Misty. Warts and all, I understand what he is. I understand he's a kind of hipster, Leonard Cohen, kind of like trying to troubadour, kind of, oh, people didn't go down. Okay, I'm going to retract that. It didn't go down very well. He's a hipster hipster songwriter doing his thing. And it's interesting, you know, I read an interview with members of Fleet Foxes about what he was like when he was a member of Fleet Foxes. And I think he was an absolute nightmare and his drug use.
I am really shocked, bad. I tell you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So... I don't think
this
he's an
is
easy
the
guy.
Most elongated way of someone saying I heard.
Wait. But I have a complicated relationship with him because I can tell he's a bit of a dickhead, but also I think he's an extraordinarily talented songwriter. And I particularly love this song. Actually, my issue, I'm gonna say, is I don't think this is an unconventional love song. I think this is a classic love song in the classic American songbook style. And actually, I know he's referencing wedding dresses people died in and all that kind of stuff. But actually, I sort of think it's actually a kind of fairly straight laced.
I think it uses a very conventional structure to say some very unconventional.
I think it uses a very conventional structure.
Yeah. But to say some very unconventional things.
I agree.
I think it nails the brief. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Well, I don't know. I feel like he's sort of saying, I love you in the song.
No, I mean, you need to listen to I Love You, Honey Bear. That's the...
I agree. I'm not talking about
also
that.
Also dripping
though,
in soccer.
But that would mean that you'd have to listen to two of his songs.
Fuck it now.
So it's really weird. Like, I find myself in this difficult position. I love this song. It's one of my favorite songs of his. I could listen to it forever. And I love all the tropes of it.
Look, it's okay for you to completely interpret it wrongly. That's okay.
Yeah.
Someone's fucking begging for a spin here. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think this is an unconventional love song. I think it's a fairly conventional. It's a conventional love song about some unconventional people or people who'd like to be considered unconventional and maybe are trying a little bit too hard to be unconventional. Hmm. And I'm afraid I'm going to bin it. I'm so sorry, guys.
I didn't see that coming.
I didn't see that coming.
I couldn't have given a tinker's cuss about Joey's response, but I'm very annoyed at yours.
It was like we experienced David workshopping a song. This has been fascinating. Yeah.
I can't see the unconventional.
You really talk yourself into that, I think.
But, sorry, man. Sorry.
Like I said, you know, other opinions are available.
Yeah. Love you, guy. Love you.
Hey, oh, by the way, right. Sorry, before we go on to the last spinner of Bennett, talking about David workshopping, for all the listeners, David's TV show will be on when this airs. And it's like big time.
So almost as important as this podcast coming
almost
out.
Almost as important. But listen, no, I'm giving a shout out. You're always bigging up your international radio show. But
yeah, Mondo Pop can go fuck yourself.
This is big stuff. This is actually his day job. So, David, what's it called again?
It's called The Couple Next Door. It's on Channel 4. And I think by the time this is on air, it will be, you can box set it on the Channel 4 and watch all of it.
Okay. Is it an unconventional love story?
Do you know what? Actually, weirdly,
it is.
No! Oh my God. Yeah.
Soundtrack's out next week. And also for our international listeners, it's also going to be on, is it HBO?
On Stars in the US.
Oh, and Stars. Nice.
Stars next year. And across Europe sometime in 2024.
Yeah. And David wrote it. Wrote the theme song.
I didn't write the theme song.
And he also is a cameo in it. Look out for David.
I've got bad news for you about the cameo.
Oh, they cut it.
Oh, man.
Oh, fuck. So that was the only reason why I was going to watch it.
Is it on the director's cut? I'm not watching it anymore.
The DVD special.
Lost two streams. Can I tell you this?
No, I appreciate the promo. And anyway, let's move to the last song, shall we? That is my choice.
It's you.
It's yours.
It's me. Shall we? It's me.
Very much like this podcast sometimes, it's Where Dreams Go to Die by John Grant. Pod, beautiful singer-songwriter, formerly of the Zars, who went solo and made this incredible album, Queen of Denmark, which this song comes from, which kind of made his name as a kind of beautiful, very, very emotional, very kind of expressive singer-songwriter. This song has been a part of my life for a very long time. I'll be honest, when we first talked about unconventional love songs, it was the first song that came to my mind. Then I went around a lot of big circles trying to persuade myself it was something else. And in the end, I realised this was the song. It's a song about hating being in love with somebody. It's about being in love with a man, a beautiful man. Like, he's obviously handsome and gorgeous and toxic and a nightmare. You can't stop being in love with him. It's got this soaring chorus that sounds like it's sort of reaching for something emotionally, but it's saying, get the fuck away from me because I can't cope with it anymore. So it's about like the awfulness of loving someone who you just cannot be in love with anymore. And so I can't think of a more unconventional love song, because he's using the kind of classic songbook structure to write like the most awful emotional kind of nightmare. And so, yeah, that's my choice. John Grant's Where Dreams Go to Die.
I think John Grant's doing what Father John Misty was trying to
do. You are picking the exact point I was about to make.
These two, it's almost unfair for these two tracks to sit next to each other on the playlist.
Right. There's a key difference, but I think they're the same.
There are differences, but
one is saying I love you in a strange, backhanded, weird, unconventional way, and the other one's saying I love you, but I wish I'd never seen
you. I hate you. I can't be with you anymore, but I can't stop being with you. Yeah. Where are you with this, Joey?
I absolutely love it. My love for this was magnified by being preceded by Father John Misty.
Ideal for your purposes, Renton. Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I think it's a beautiful choice. I've just looked at my phone, which has got the track. I'm just looking at the lyrics. It's 6 minutes long.
Yeah, so the outro goes on for a long, long time.
Right, I was going to say.
It's got this beautiful cascading.
I'd never have described it as a six-minute track. I think it's stunning, David. I absolutely love it. Nails the brief. Great song. John Grant being like premium John Grant.
Yeah.
It is good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like John Grant Max, isn't it? And the thing is, I got into John Grant when most people did with Pale Green Ghosts, and I immediately listened to this album. And this is very much more conventional musically than the second album. I would say this is peak Elton John does John Grant. Elton John Grant. It's an astounding record, and I love it for that kind of caustic, awful kind of ability to skewer. Like, you know, I can't think of another love song of any sort that uses the word carcass as well as this does.
Oh, I know.
About a living person. But I will back up Joey that there is a real similarity in what it does in Father John Misty, and that is a hill I'm willing to die on. I'm still spinning it, obviously.
I'm so glad that I'm not the only one that thinks there's massive crossovers between Father John Misty and John Grant. I actually had to like have a quick little think going, is someone nominated the same two people for this thing? And then looked at the next. Like, you know, when you just kind of put people in categories in your head,
it's Father John Grant.
Yeah, Father John Grant. Yeah. There's a crossover. I've always kind of thought that his music is like big, but just doesn't tick it with me. So I'm not a big fan of the song, to be brutally honest with you. I think it's a bit drab. I think it is once again like something from a film, but like just like, I don't know, like a weird film that I wouldn't be into. I do think that like lyrically it hits the mark. Can I do like I'd spin it, but at your house and not at mine?
That's a new niche version of it.
It's a very, very niche answer.
My favorite is still when someone said, I'm going to spin it straight into the bin.
Spin it straight into the bin. That was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you feel now, Luke? One?
Probably FIFA.
You know what? Right. I'm really sorry to do this, but it hits the brief, but yeah. It's also about would you actually spin it? And I wouldn't,
it would probably clear the dance floor, but it would be a great way to do it.
Oh, I'd fucking if I wanted to get sacked. Yeah,
it's a great song, David, but there's not going to be any slow dances to this record, at least not after the chorus. Wait,
the brief wasn't to play this at a wedding.
That's not the brief, yeah.
That's not the brief.
Yeah, right after Bonkers.
Bonkers.
On that bombshell.
So, 3-0 each for Yasin Bey / Mos Def and Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. Who is choosing what? I'm going to say Frankie Valli.
I'm going to say... Mos Def.
I'm going to say Mos Def.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was obvious.
And Joey's going to have to say Frankie Valli.
And I have to say Frankie Valli. So I think we can call that a legitimate tie.
That's a legitimate try.
Good. Well,
maybe we could mix a mashup for the pod.
I think the bass line would boom, 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 boom. You could anyway.
Just get one of those AI programs, separate out the vocals.
Yeah.
Smash them over the top.
Easy.
Well, that is episode 39 in the can. Very nice. Getting the band back together. Welcome back, Joey. We will be back in December with our roll call of top 10 albums and tracks of 2023. Let the bum fight commence. Fire the algo up, Dave.
I'm getting it going. I'm excited already, guys.
So if you like what you've heard, please give us a review or subscribe wherever you get your pods. We would love that. And find us on all the socials. We're always up to music chat. Till episode 40. Ooh, the big 4-0. You've been listening to This Is Not Happening.